So we are starting a new series this morning. I have the pleasure of speaking to you this morning. Pastor Roy is out of town, and so I'm filling in. Before we jump into the message, though, I want to make a quick announcement about some support groups that we offer through Washington Heights. If you're dealing with some junk in your life and you're looking for a group that can kind of come alongside you and offer you some support, we do have some resources here for you. Couple of very specific ones. We have Celebrate Recovery that meets every Tuesday right here in this space. They start at 6 o'clock. This is for adults who are working through hurts, habits, and hangups. If you need a group to come to kind of work through the junk in your life, Celebrate Recovery is great for you. We have a student version of that called The Landing, which meets Tuesdays. 6:30 to 8:30, and it's similar content to what the adults are going through, but it's specifically geared for our teenagers, grades 7 through 12. We do that every single Tuesday here also. We also, on Thursday night, have Grief Share at 6:30 p.m., and then Divorce Care at 7:30. If you would like more information about the different support groups that we offer here, you can text the word groups to the number on your screen, and we will get that information into your hands. This morning, as I mentioned, we're starting a new series, and it's called Misquoted, and we're looking at common phrases or passages from the Bible that people use all the time that are either taken out of context or maybe just don't even exist in the Bible at all. And I wanted to start off this morning with kind of a shared reality. I'm a fan of the cinema. I guess that's a weird thing to call it in America. It's the movies. We don't call it the cinema. I don't know why I said that. So I love the movies. I remember my first experience going to the movies. It was way back in 1978. Yeah, I'm that old. And why are you laughing at that? I went to, that hurts. I went to the movies and I saw when it premiered Star Wars on the big screen. And like, yeah, it changed my life. And that's weird to say because it's just a movie. But I became infatuated with all things, you know, movie at that point. And like the immersive content was something that I had never felt before. And some of you guys are probably the same way. Here's what I want you guys watching online. Throw in the chat the name of the first movie you went to see in the movie theater. Throw it in. I'd love to see some of your responses to that. For the rest of us, though, I want to kind of walk through some of my favorite movies. I love the Star Wars thing, well, except the prequel. Those were terrible. You all know. but I love my favorite kind of movies are movies that are kind of adaptations of books or other media. So, you know, like take a book and turn it into a movie. That's kind of cool. Some of my favorite ones are comic books that are turned into movies. I'm a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And my favorite thing when I go to the movies, like it's a whole, I have to prep for it. It's this whole thing. So like, I like starve myself for 2 days beforehand. You guys don't do that? It's just me. Okay. So I starve myself, I get to the theater and, you know, get my ticket, and then you go into the, you know, to get your snacks. I get, you know, the large buttered popcorn and frozen junior mints and some red vines and then a gallon of Diet Coke. No, the Diet Coke counterbalances all the rest. It makes it okay. And so you work your way through the theater into the crowd, you find your seat and and you sit down and kind of wedge yourself into that spot and you wait and you're eating the popcorn and kind of people watching because I'm a people watcher, and then the magic moment happens, right? Those lights, they dim and you're sitting and you can hear the air conditioners pumping in that ice cold air. Drink some of that Diet Coke, eat some popcorn, and then the movie comes on. And it's like that moment, it's magic. And I want to like walk you through kind of an immersive experience, right? Just walk, roll with me, I'm a youth pastor. So I want you to imagine you're in the movie theater and you've got your snacks and you're all set up, the lights have just dimmed. And on the screen, it slowly fades to light. And it's a point of view from behind a guy who's plowing a field with a couple of donkeys. And he's plowing this field, and the camera angle slowly pulls back just a little bit, and you realize it's a first-person view. And in one hand, this guy has a sword and the gleaming glint off of it and the point of the sword. And he's slowly creeping up, sneaking up on the guy that's plowing the field. And just as he gets right to him, whew, fades to black. And then one of those things they love to do in the movies, right? You get that ba-womp. You know what I'm talking about? That sound. That's the only way to describe it is the ba-womp. It goes, ba-womp. Right? And then the black screen is illuminated ever so briefly by a strike of lightning. And then they pan in close to this dried field, and a small smoldering flame starts to flicker, and it starts to grow, and it spreads across this field. And as the camera pans out, you see the first trails of smoke glistening up into the sky. The screen goes black again. Bwop! You guys are in it now, huh? Fades to light again. Rolling grass-covered hills down into a valley. And down in the valley, you can see some herdsmen tending to their flock, and on either side, stealthily moving through the grass, two armies make their way down. And right when they get to the battle, bwomp! I'm gonna have you do it with me next time. Final cutscene. Interior of a house. There's a party going on. There's a lot of people, and there's food and music. And then a wind blows through the open windows, and the candles all blow out. And in the dimly lit room, you can hear a sound approaching. Sounds kind of like a freight train, except the people in the room don't know what a freight train is because it's ancient Israel. And the sound grows and builds and builds, and finally it starts to hit the house, and the house is shuddering and shaking close up to a man's face. He looks up to the ceiling, and there's glints of dirt and dust falling down, and then a giant beam cracks, and the lights go out, and the bwomp hits. Everyone say it. Bwomp. Hey, you guys are good. And then the music starts up. You know, it's like that driving kind of music. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know why it sounds like drums or something, but all right, so dun, 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 it's like building this crescendo, and the screen lights up, and you see sandal-covered feet, and they're running in perfect rhythm to the music. Dun, 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 dun. And they're running through this dirt path. And then cut scene, another pair of feet. I don't know why, but it's someone else, and he's running too, but he's coming from a different direction. And then cut, a third pair of feet, and then a fourth, and they all seem to be converging on this one spot, and it's one of those drone angles, one of those real expensive ones, right? We're talking 4K. And it's way up high, and you see this quaint little kind of ranch property, and the people are coming from all points of the compass, four men running to this house, cut inside the house. They come in, and they're out of breath, and there's one finely dressed gentleman in nice robes standing at the front, obviously the man of the house. And the servants run up to him one at a time. And the first one catches his breath, and he says, "My master, Job." See, that's his name. That's the name of the movie, too. "Job, I have terrible news. Raiders came, and they put all of your servants to the sword. They've taken your donkeys, and I'm the only one who survived." And he steps aside. And it almost becomes like a twisted game of one-upsmanship. The next guy says, "My master Job, the fire from God came, and it burned up all your fields, and it burned up your goats and your cattle." And the next guy steps up and says, "I'm so sorry to tell you, my master Job, but raiders came and they converged on the valley where your shepherds had your camels, and they put all the servants to the sword. I'm the only one that survived, and they've taken your camels." And then the last man comes up, and he can't even make eye contact. And he finally composes himself. And he looks Job in the eye and he says, "I'm so sorry. My master Job, all of your children were having dinner at your oldest son's house. And a great wind came and the house collapsed. And I'm the only one that survived. And now the camera shifts around so we can see Job's face. And it does one of those tricky camera angles where like the background kind of sucks behind him. And it's at that moment Job breaks and he tears his robes and he cries out to God, "Why?" He's at the lowest point of his life. Everything he had, everything he valued has been stripped away and taken away from him. And he doesn't know why. And if you read the book of Job, about halfway through, three friends of his show up and they come to console him. And they spend 7 days sitting with him, not talking. I don't know, that seems kind of weird. And then finally, when they do talk, they make inferences as far as why God allowed this to happen to Job. One, you must have sinned in some way you didn't know about, and they make all these accusations, and Job maintains his innocence. I didn't do anything. I don't know why God is doing this. And the reason like I bring this story in today is because so many times we will be completely crushed by circumstances of this life. And sometimes, very well-meaning friends or followers of Jesus will come to us in those moments and they'll share something with us. They'll say, "Well, I want you to take heart, right? Feel good. Don't be so down. Like, God would never give you more than you can handle." Right? We've heard this. God will never give you more than you can handle. Well, if you're someone who has been maybe beaten down by life at some point in time, someone who's lost a child or lost a loved one, someone who's dealt with debilitating illness or injury, someone who's been abused physically or mentally, someone who's been drugged through the lowest parts that this life can drag a person, you can sit there and go, "But that's not really true. Because I've been given more than I can handle. I've had to endure more than I should have to handle." And so where does that leave us? It's in the Bible, right? It's got to be true. God won't give you more than you can handle. But as you can infer by the name of the series, that's not really what it says. So let's take a look. The verse that most people think that they are quoting when they make that comment is from 1 Corinthians, and it's found in chapter 10, verse 13. And Paul writes, "No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it." And so we have to look at this in context, because context matters. When we read a passage, we have to make sure that we are interpreting it in the way that the original writer meant it to be read by the people he sent it to. And that word that is kind of the key in this phrase is that word that we translate temptation. And there's three possible translations for it. It could either be a temptation to sin, a trial, or some type of suffering. And so you look at those three options, go, "Oh, well, that fits, right? If it's some type of suffering, if it's a trial in life, that kind of fits." But we have to look at the context, right? So in order to understand what Paul meant by that word temptation, we have to walk back into the chapters before this verse, to understand and look and see what he was talking about. And I'll give you a reason why. Let me give you an example why context matters. If I were to have a conversation with one of you, and say, "Yeah, I was out for a walk today, and I saw a crane." Like, just think in your mind, what would you picture if I told you that? "I had a walk today, and I saw a crane." Some of you would picture this: a large piece of equipment used to pick up and move very heavy objects from one spot to the other. Right? Some of you, yeah, obviously, that's a crane, duh. But maybe some of you are from the South. Like, I don't think we have these here. But if you're from the South, and I said I was out for a walk today and I saw a crane, you might be thinking about this gigantic wetland bird. But without context, it would be hard to know what I was talking about. So we have to place it in context. If we look at the passages right before Paul wrote that passage on temptation, he was talking about Israel's struggle with idolatry, sexual sin, greed, and general grumbling. So he was talking about sin, a temptation to sin. And so we can't translate that verse and use it to say that God won't give you more than you can stand, because you will. We all know this to be true. If you've lived any length of life on this planet, you probably already have, or sadly, I can tell you, you will at some point in time, odds are high, have to deal with something that is more than you can stand. It's more than you can take. That's like we live on a broken world. And he never promised us that it would be easy. In fact, Jesus said, in this life you will have trouble. Part B of that is pretty gracious, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And see, Paul understood affliction. You know the story of the Apostle Paul. You know he underwent great persecution. He had great trials in his life. And he was that apostle. You know, he was shipwrecked. He was beaten. He was flogged. He was thrown in jail. And you're sitting there going, no, life was easy for Paul? No. He knew what suffering was all about. In fact, in 2 Corinthians 1, 8 through 9, he tells us, and he's writing this to them, and he's telling his readers kind of what they dealt with right before he wrote this. He says, for we don't want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia. And he's not talking about the Olympics. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt like we had received the sentence of death. He's saying, we went through something in Asia that we didn't think we were getting out of. We were certain that we were suffering under a death sentence and that this was going to be the end of the story. And he's telling them this for a reason. He's saying, look, you're going to have more than you can take. And you're going to have to find a way through it. And let me tell you the way through it. But before we get, there's reasons for our suffering, right? It's not purposeless. It's not pointless. We don't follow this benevolent God who just throws things at us that we're ill-equipped to handle. It's all designed to help us to seek him and to grow in our faith with him. Great quote. I read this one the other day. It says, for many, the search for Jesus is initiated from experiencing an event in life so powerful, it awakens the dragons of faith from pain so deep, it calls on the hidden fears of the soul in an effort to survive. For others, it means a serious personal life survey that ultimately forces the confrontation with the futility, aesthetics, and despair in their lives. See, we have a choice to make. When we are given more than we can take, we can curl up within ourselves. We can try to do it on our own. We can rely on our own strength, our own ability, our own financial means, or whatever it is to deal with these problems on our own. Or we can allow it to transform us. We can allow it to let us turn to a holy and perfect God who promises to be there with us in the middle of it all. We can choose to do it our own, or we can give it over to God and see what he does through it and in the middle of it and because of it. See, Paul continued in the second half of that verse. He says, indeed, recapping, we felt we had received a sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him, we have set our hope that again. He's talking about Where are you putting your hope? Where are you putting your faith? Like in this world, we are going to be battered and beaten. We're going to be smacked down time and time again because of this broken world. And in the midst of that, we have an opportunity and an option to choose God, to trust Him, to allow Him to work through our pain, to work through our circumstances, and to be a part of what He's doing. See, Paul suffered in so many different ways. It wasn't just, you know, one-time thing. In fact, we know he had a physical affliction. It doesn't go into great detail of what it is. Paul refers to it as a thorn in his side, and we see it in this verse here. He says, so to keep me from being conceited, right, this is Paul, probably one of the greatest, like, church planter apostles in, you know, the ancient world. And he says, to keep me from being conceited, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given to me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for in my power, it's made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness. Paul says, when I release it all, when I give up control, when I stop trying to manage everything through my own power, and my own will, and my own resources, and my own talent, it makes room for God to move. It leaves room for, in my weakness, for this powerful God to shine through. And who knows what He'll do through that? How many other people will be impacted because you allowed yourself to be weak, that He could be strong? I think as followers, if we spent more time humbly coming to the foot of the cross with all of our junk in life, with all of our afflictions, with all of our pain and our sorrow, and especially when life gets overwhelming to us, that if we just cried out, Father, I can't do this on my own. It's like in the faith story, we find ourselves crying in the front seat of a car to this holy God saying, God, I can't do this. I need you in my life. And it's through those moments that we see Him move in the most powerful ways. Because it's in our weakness that He is strong. See, where are we putting our faith? In our culture, I think too often we view weakness as some sort of moral failure. To admit you're weak is like saying that you are less than or not good enough. But God is saying, I want you to turn to me in the midst of life's trials. I want to be closest to you in the middle of your darkest days. I'm going to be right there beside you when nobody else is. I want to have a relationship with you. He loves you. He cares for you. He created you. You're here for a purpose. There's a reason behind it. But we have to let Him in. And when we do, we find that He gives us His grace, which is sufficient for the time. This unmerited favor that we could never earn, that we don't deserve, that He gives to us freely when we put our faith and trust in Him. Does that mean when I put my faith in Him, everything turns out perfect? No. but it means I know how the story ends, right? I know that when I put my faith and trust in him, it gives him the space to be strong when I'm weak. It gives me that freedom to let it go and turn it over to him because I know he's big enough to deal with it. And that regardless of what happens, come what may, I'm going to continue to pour my faith and my worship into him. Because I know that my time on this planet is finite. I won't be here forever. There is something beyond this. I believe that with every fiber of my being. And I believe that if you put your faith and trust in Jesus, not only does he give you his grace here, but it assures your eternity when your time here is done. And it's an eternity that you can spend where there's no more sorrow, there's no more tears, there's no more pain, there's no more suffering. It's an eternity filled with love in the presence of an almighty creator God. And every one of us has a choice to make. We can choose to love God and love other people, or we could choose to live life going our own way, on our own strength, on our own abilities, on our own finances, or whatever else. Here's the truth I want you to take away today. If you put your faith and trust in Jesus, God will never give you more than he can handle. Well, thank you. I'm going to pray. And if you're like on the fence, if you haven't decided yet, if you believe in this whole Jesus thing, but maybe there's a still small voice in the back of your mind saying it's time. I can turn it over. I can release it to him. I can experience freedom for the first time. I can rest in peace knowing the ending of the story. I'm going to give an opportunity to do that. We're going to pray together corporately here. Would you pray with me? Father God, I come before you this morning and I thank you so much for this time and this place. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for the truth that we find in it. God, thank you for being strong so that we can be weak. God, thank you for everything you do for us on a daily basis. Lord, in response to that, help us to be your hands and feet on this broken planet. God, give us a desire to go back into our home, work, communities, and interact with people in a different way, that we would show them your love, that we would show them the things that you're about, God, that it would draw more and more people to you. Because I just want to help people meet and follow you. And Lord, this morning, if there's someone on the edge of crossing that line of faith, Lord, speak to them right now and let them know that you are real, that you made them, that you love them, that you want to have a relationship with them, and that all they have to do right now is admit that they're a sinner, they can't do it on their own, and put their faith and trust in you as a holy God who sent his son to die a death that we deserve, to pay that debt of sin, so that we could be made right in your eyes. God, I thank you for allowing us to be a part of your story. I pray that you just be with us in the highest highs and in our lowest lows. God, help us to walk with you every day for the rest of our lives. We love you. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Real quick before we depart here, if by chance you cross that line of faith today and put your faith and trust in Jesus for the very first time, we would love to connect with you. If that's you, you can text the word trust to the number on your screen. We'll reach out to you. We can give you information about kind of next steps in your walk of faith, connect you with a small group, and help you kind of move on in this new walk that you've decided to walk. Thank you so much for coming. You guys enjoy your day. You guys are out of here.